Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know
with sports' biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell.
Rick is, I think, just a great guy at handling these situations. I have all the respect in the world for him as a coach, how to manage the roster and knew what all of his guys were capable of doing and or not doing and put them in a position to succeed.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
We are so glad you're with us right here at eRadiosports.com. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. And as promised, it is time for a recap and a regular season retrospective on the Dallas Mavericks' disappointing season. But fortunately, I'm alongside a guy that always puts a smile on my face, puts me in a good mood. I've got him on the block. I've got him posted up, and hopefully I won't throw too many elbows. It's great to be alongside the Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folliwell. Welcome back, Mark.
Great to be here. No elbows. That's always a good thing. We don't want any elbows, but I still think, intriguing things to talk about from this past season for the Mavs, for sure.
Well, let's get down to business, because I think back to the month of September when we huddled up and we previewed the upcoming season. And one of the things that you shared that really resonated with me is that throughout all your years of covering the NBA, that there's a lot of twists and turns that take place within this season. There was dynamic change that took place within this roster. What are your thoughts now, Mark? You've had about a month to kind of digest what did transpire and how the script played out.
Well, I certainly think that the most important thing that happened for Dallas happened before they ever took the floor, and that was that Dirk needed knee surgery and ended up being out longer than expected. So clearly that's the issue that set Dallas off on the wrong foot. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When your best player, and I think Dirk clearly is the best player on this team by a pretty healthy margin when he's healthy, so to speak, I think that that's going to put you in a tough spot. And so Dallas, without Dirk for 27 games and another 15 or more games to get himself anything close to right, really put them behind the eight ball, in addition to a lot of new faces. And so rather than having that stabilizing force of being able to help usher in and make the transition easier for a lot of the new guys, it was just a complete free-for-all, complete chaos, with everybody trying to figure out where they fit in, with Dirk not being that anchor and that stabilizing force. So that got them off to a bad start. I think that they did a great job of bouncing back, and they ended up doing something that no Western Conference team has done since 1981, and that is to go 10 games below 500 in a season and rally back to finish at least at 500 at 41-41. So that's something nice to be a part of. High expectations here, so they didn't end up reaching the playoffs. So that obviously leaves a bitter pill in everybody's mouth. But I think that it also spurs them to work even harder than they might have planned on. I'm sure they were going to work hard to make this thing better, but I'm sure that there's maybe even an extra gear that everybody's found in terms of motivation to get this thing on the right track back as quickly as possible.
Mark, I had an opportunity to kind of dissect and look at the schedule and some of the difficult stretches that the Dallas Mavericks went through. There was one particular stretch and challenge where they had 16 of 23 games that were on the road. That resulted in only winning 3 of 12 and 4 overtime losses. I think the one thing that really reinforces kind of what you're talking about is the value of Dirk. We saw that tangible evidence. And not only when he was missing, but of course when he's not at full capacity, it's not only his points and his production, but it is his leadership.
And he draws attention. You know, he has to be accounted for, and because of the attention that he draws, that opens up other things for other people. So I think that in the case of that particular stretch of schedule, you know, there's a saying in baseball that you can't win a pennant in April, but you can certainly lose one. And I think that over the course of an 82-game season in basketball, sometimes we have a tendency to think that, oh, well, these early games, they're not as important. But they do count in the standings. And I think that we saw this year that those games in November and December and early January are just as significant in the standings as the games in March and April. And so what happened with that really tough stretch that you're talking about, Elissa, is that the Mavs dug themselves too big of a hole to ultimately be able to dig out of. They were 13-23. Going into the final game of that stretch you're talking about, the 16 of 23 on the road, ended in Sacramento on January the 10th. They did win that game. That ended their long overtime stretch of losses, of 8 straight overtime losses, almost the NBA record, as a matter of fact. Maybe it ended up being 10 straight overtime losses. I guess they tied the record for most overtime losses consecutively. But point being is that stretch of schedule where they lost so many games, I believe 13 of 15 at one point, it did put them in too big of a hole ultimately to dig out of, despite the fact that they played much, much better once Dirk got into his groove after the All-Star break. The hole dug by that very, very poor stretch of the schedule proved to be just too much to overcome.
Well, the good news is that Dirk's going to be hanging out around here during the summer months. Going into next year, he will be 100%, and we certainly want to wish him a happy birthday. He's going to be 35.
He will be, very soon. Yeah, June the 19th, 1978 is when we welcomed Dirk Werner Nowitzki into the world, and the place hasn't been the same since. So we wish him happy birthday coming up soon.
In German, you say, "35 Jahre alt." So that's his Geburtstag.
I'll take your word for it. You could be telling me something completely incorrect, and I wouldn't have any idea. So.
Very good. Well, one of the positives that did take place this year was there was a number of historic milestones. And we were just talking about Dirk, 25,000 points, 9,000 rebounds. Yeah. Vince Carter had his. Sean Marion appearing in his 1,000th game against Phoenix. And then head coach Rick Carlisle secured his 500th win against Portland this year. And I know as Dallas Maverick fans, they have a sincere gratitude and appreciation for what these men have contributed, not only with the Mavericks, but in the league overall.
Yeah, obviously when you reach numbers like that, that means you've been in the league for a long time, and that's what a lot of those guys will say. It's sort of how they deflect the attention away from themselves for those individual accomplishments. But Dirk realizes, and you don't see many outward displays of emotion from Dirk whenever those moments happen in his career, but if you watch that game in New Orleans, the next-to-last game of the season, game 80 of the year, Dirk smiled, looked back at the bench. The bench knew he was getting to 25,000. Dirk knew the bucket when it happened. So there was certainly a sense of pride in that. He actually said something on Twitter after the fact, too, about all the thanks for the support and what everybody had to say to him about the 25,000 points. So that was great. I don't think Rick Carlisle had a whole lot of interest in talking about the 500 wins. I think the happiest thing about it for him was that it happened and it was in the past and he didn't have to address it anymore. The next thing up for him, by the way, is passing a guy that he played for. Casey Jones is just a few wins ahead of Rick on the all-time coaching victory list. So that's something that will happen early on next year. Sean Marion, as you noted, 1,000 games, 9,000 rebounds. He's about to move into the top 40 in the rebounding list. Vince Carter passed names like Hal Greer, Larry Bird, Gary Payton, Clyde Drexler on the all-time scoring list. I think he certainly has an appreciation for that, and that really puts him into Hall of Fame territory. There isn't a single player in the league that scored at least 21,000 points. That's everybody that's eligible to be in the Hall of Fame that's achieved that mark has made it to the Hall of Fame. And so the fact that Vince late in the season passed 22,000 and will probably pass 23,000 and maybe a little bit more after that, you know, get somewhere between 23 and 24 sometime early on or late next season. And you know, I don't know what his plans are for his career after that when his contract runs out after next season. But clearly he's going to be in Hall of Fame territory with the numbers that he continued to add to his resume this year and will continue to do so next year.
Mark, I'd like to continue to talk about some of the positives. And I thought that Vince Carter really was spot on in his exit interview. He talked about that, how he felt that after the All-Star break, this is when the team really started to stride out. Yeah. They started to trust each other more. The team chemistry evolved. They were sharing the basketball more. Yeah. Did you see that?
Sure, absolutely I did. Yeah, I thought, look, everything that they did after the All-Star break was very positive. They won games, and forgive me for not off the top of my head, I don't remember the record, but they won games after the All-Star break at a rate that would reflect, if you extrapolated out over the full 82-game season, they were on a pace to be a 50-win team post-All-Star break, and they were on a pace to be a high 40s win team if you looked at what they did from whenever things started to turn in the right direction January 10th on. The numbers with Dirk as a starter also were the pace of a high 40-win team, 48, 49 wins over the course of the regular season. So they did a lot of things well when Dirk was healthy and when they especially got after the All-Star break. They started to beat a lot more good teams, to win games against high-caliber teams like, you know, they had that home win against the Clippers. They had that great win against the Chicago Bulls. You know, they were able to beat Denver in overtime, so they were able to beat some of those caliber of teams that they really couldn't hold a candle to early in the season. So there were a lot of positives that happened after the All-Star break, and I would say that Vince's assessment is spot on, and I think he was a big part of it. Look, Vince had a great year this year. I voted him third in the sixth man of the year voting. I was the only person who did that. I thought clearly J.R. Smith and Jamal Crawford were the top two guys. Nobody else saw it my way, but Vince was seventh in the league this year in points per game off the bench. He was tied for the league lead in three-pointers made off the bench. He led the team in plus-minus. He led the team from not just that statistical plus-minus standpoint, but from a leadership standpoint. He defended. He drew charges. He did a lot of things that I thought were worthy of being. He embraced the sixth man role. I thought he did a lot of things that were worthy of getting a little bit of recognition for what he meant to the team and his assessment, like I said, of what the Mavericks did after the All-Star break. I would agree with that 100%.
Vince Carter, certainly a very special guy, but I think one of the things that was very special about this particular team is the flexibility that they had with the number of rotations and the depth. You look at the bench production, a league-leading 42 points per game, and they scored 60 points three times. That is certainly nice to have.
Well, Rick has really preached this philosophy in his time here, five seasons now in Dallas, and he's believed that the way the league is now, you really have to build your team in a strength in numbers approach. So the roster is assembled with the hopes of being deep and having a lot of different guys being able to contribute. He tells them everybody has to stay ready. It doesn't matter if you're in or out of the rotation, if you're the 14th guy on the roster or whatever, you're one injury, you're one night of foul trouble, you're one situation away from being pressed into minutes and a role that maybe you haven't been used to having over the recent weeks leading up to it. So he stresses the be ready thing, and I think that by and large part, most everyone over the course of 5 years that Rick Carlisle has been here has bought into that. This year was no different. They did have the strength in numbers approach. They didn't necessarily start their best five guys game in, game out, because Rick also had a philosophy that over the course of 48 minutes, they wanted to set up their rotation and set up their lineup where they can have an evened out attack over those 48 minutes. And it worked on a lot of nights, especially in the second half of the season.
Let's talk some more about team chemistry. I want you to expound on that. Of course, the Dallas Mavericks played in 11 overtimes this year. And I think one of the things that we saw that the nemesis was their inability to close out the fourth quarter and in overtimes. Mark, how much of that is a familiarity factor and these guys just not playing together?
Oh, I think there's certainly that's a big part of it. Youth, I think, contributed to it as well. But the chemistry aspect of things, the not having a lot of familiarity one with one another, of course, those sort of things are going to show up in late-game situations. So the fact that you had Mayo and Collison and Brand and Kamen and all of these new guys that were brought into the fold this year, clearly the fact that they hadn't been on the floor together in crucial situations contributed to the Mavericks' inability to play well in a lot of late fourth quarters and the overtime deal. They did, again, win three overtime games at the one in January and then one in March and a big one against Denver late there in April, very late in the season, one of the last games of the year. And I think not only did you see the overtime thing get better, you also saw the record of close games get better. At one point this year, the Mavs, I think the record was 4-9 that were in games that were within 3 points ahead or behind in the final minute of the fourth quarter. And that record got a whole lot better. I believe it ended up being 15-17 or something like that for the year. So they ended up going 11-8 or 12-8. I don't remember exactly what it was. 11-8, 12-8, something like that, in games that were within 3 points in the final minute when you looked at it from that big win in Sacramento, 10th of January on. So things got a lot better. Dirk's presence on the floor also helped that out. Again, a stabilizing force, a place to go. I mean, when you're having all these mistakes late in the game and the turnovers, a lot of that is just really born out of players not only not being familiar with one another, but being thrust into roles and situations that they're not familiar being in. And so when everything is going crazy at the end of the game and you're in a situation they're not used to, when you've got Dirk out there, when you've got a go-to guy, if nothing else, it's a place to go so you don't screw up and turn the ball over and make a mistake. Give it to Dirk, and maybe he's not going to make the shot, but he is, and a lot of times going to make the shot, a lot of times make the right play and make the pass to somebody who may or may not make the shot. So having Dirk out there was yet again another factor into the improvement in performing better late in games as the season transpired.
But Mark, how do you maintain team chemistry and confidence in that equilibrium when, as Rick Carlisle said, we're seeing more of a growing trend that these guys are on one-year contracts. It's trending more towards like how Major League Baseball is doing it. I mean, that puts a huge onus on the head coach and the coaching staff to get these guys up to par quickly.
It does, and I think that another thing that you need to have, though, is, again, when you have a superstar, that makes things a lot easier. And if you can get back to, and I think this is certainly the indications are that this is the route they want to go, if you can get back to having a core of guys around that superstar, then that plays a big role in it, too. For a long time, there was that core of Jason Kidd, Jason Terry, Sean Marion. You know, Tyson was only in here for a year, but he fit right into the mix. But you had three or four or five players who ended up being J.J. Barea, if I may throw another name in there. You had four or five guys that played together for 5+ seasons, and so at least you had a core of players, and a lot of whom would be on the floor together at the end of games, that were able to have chemistry established within themselves. And then you bring in a hard-nosed, tough, passionate, intelligent player like Tyson Chandler, and in his particular year here when they won the championship, yeah, it was only his one season here, but because of all of those attributes that I mentioned about him, then he's able to slide into the core of guys that had been here together for a long period of time and establishing chemistry and establishing roles and establishing, if I may use a corporate buzzword, establishing synergy.
Oh,
at the end. Yeah, synergy. Gotta love synergy. you have that at the end of games.
Well, we certainly got spoiled, though, in that 2011 season, because how many times do we see them with their back against the wall and in a precarious situation? And the cocktail of choice, of course, was Dirk, because he'd just muscle and take to the rack.
Well, those were great. Those were great days for sure.
Great,
yeah, those are great memories and great days, absolutely. And we were spoiled by what we saw then, and how well they executed in late game situations, especially in the playoff run in 2011, and not just executing well in late game situations, but the intestinal fortitude, the heart, the never say die attitude. I mean, there were many, many great comebacks, as we remember. One of them kind of was on my mind recently, for those who saw the San Antonio Game 1 victory against Golden State. San Antonio jumped into a very select group of teams in the last 11 years who have rallied from down 15 or more in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter to win a game. The Mavs were one of the three teams to have done that when they had their big comeback in Game 4 against Oklahoma City. So, yeah, we were spoiled by many historic, unique things that we saw over the course of that season and that playoff run.
You know, the month of June is going to be very interesting with the draft upon us, but what is the mindset for the Mavericks? I mean, there's obviously a number of intriguing names that are out there, Dwight Howard, Chris Paul. I mean, how do you see themselves jockeying for position as they look to move forward?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I'm not sure that I really have an answer to it. The draft will be the first thing to look at. They're going to have a lottery pick, presumably, unless there's some sort of trade that occurs, and I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know, especially with this front office. But the first thing to look to will be the draft. If things play out as the odds say they will, they'll pick 13th, 98% chance based on the results of the lottery that they'll stay in the position of picking 13th. I do think that they can get a good player there that they can start bringing into the mix this year. And then free agency will hit on July the 1st, and they'll have to do their evaluation beforehand of who they want to keep, what they would be willing to pay the players that they would look to keep, what their market value is going to be. That's going to be one step of the process. Of course, they'll have to do their due diligence with the biggest names like Chris Paul and Dwight Howard. I mean, you owe it to yourself and your fan base to do that, and they'll be making the appropriate phone calls, and appropriate meetings will take place on that front. But I think the lesson that was learned from last year when things didn't work out with Deron Williams and they had to scramble, and they put together a nice team that, as we discussed earlier, I think certainly could have been better had you had a healthy Dirk all year long and could have been a playoff team. But they did have to scramble, and I think that so while you're looking at CP3 and Dwight Howard, you're going to have a lot of other irons in the fire too, because we certainly understand that it's a long shot that either one of them, or heavens to bid, both of them would somehow agree to come on board with the Dallas Mavericks. It's very, very slim chances, but you're in the conversation, and you have to see how that goes. But you've got to make sure that you have irons in the fire, that if that doesn't work out, there are other really, I think, quality free agents that are out there that could be part of a core and be part of a good team here, because you still have Dirk to build around.
Well, fortunately, we have our triple threat. We are in good hands. We've got Mark and Donnie and Rick, and I'm sure
the triangle of trust.
There we go. I mean, it's complicated, but they're going to work it all out. Now, one of the guys I do want to hit on, I know we're running short on time, but is Brandon Wright. Certainly one of the most improved players, not only on this team.
You're a big fan of his.
I am a very big fan, Mr. Nashville now, but just the strides that he took, I mean, was really incredible, and I think he was one of the most improved players within the Western Conference. I don't know if that's a stretch.
I really, really loved what he brought to the table this year, and when the Mavericks get ready to sit down and do their meetings in the offseason and evaluate the construction of the roster going forward, I mean, who knows what his market value is going to be, but I would hope that his market value will be in a place where the Mavericks can look at retaining him. He certainly is going to command a multi-year contract of some sort. I don't know what the dollar figure is going to be. I've heard people speculate, well, he might get Jan Mahimi money, which was 4 years and $16 million. And I think that'd be a great number to bring back a guy who can situationally start for you and be a great backup and is a very, very efficient offensive player. He has his shortcomings defensively and rebounding-wise, but it's not like he is terrible at those things either. You know, you just have to put him in the right situation for him to be able to contribute on that end of the floor, and I think we saw as the year played out that he was put in that position to contribute in that regard. So I love Wright on the offensive end, and if he can turn into a role over a full season where he plays the way he did in March and April, which was 23 or 24 minutes a game, between 11 and 12 points and between 5 and 6 rebounds and a block and a half a game, if Brandon Wright can be that player over the course of 82 games and he gets paid the kind of money that we're talking about, I think that would be a great signing for the Mavericks. I think that would be a great situation for him. He's put in the work. The Mavericks have put in the work to develop him. I really, really hope that that's a relationship that continues going forward, the Dallas Mavericks and Brandon Wright. So we shall see.
Well, Rick Carlisle certainly put in a lot of time with Darren Collison. I know there's a big question mark surrounding the one position, the point guard position. We saw Darren Collison, his effort, he's coachable, his offensive skill set, so difficult to contain, his dribble drive, his athleticism. Yeah. Both his parents, in fact, were elite track athletes. But what about defensively? Did you see him progress? It seemed like he trusted the system more defensively. He wasn't hugging up on his guy. Right. And he was providing that weak side help defense.
Yeah, you know, he certainly got better as the season went along. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who's quick, who is going to be able to gamble and get in the passing lane and get steals and do things like that. You know, that's an area of the floor that he's going to have to work to get better on. I think you'd say the same thing about O.J. Mayo. And if those guys are somewhere else or here next year, wherever it is, those are two guys that are going to have to work to improve on the defensive end of the floor. But I think there's no doubt that Darren Collison and O.J. Mayo both, I know you didn't ask me about him, but I'll include him in this conversation. Both of those guys did their very best to put in the work, the extra time before practice, the extra time after practice. They put in a lot of work to get better. Rick spent a lot of time working with the two of them collectively and individually this year. And the hope was that you would bring in two guys who were in their mid-20s who could be part of a backcourt with the Mavericks for many years to come. Clearly, we saw that there was a drop-off in terms of leadership and stability when you didn't have Jason Kidd there to, at the minimum, run the ship in the last 5 minutes of the game.
And rebounding.
Absolutely. They certainly missed that as well. So not having him here and having those young guys here was one thing that didn't go exactly the way the Mavericks had hoped that it would this season. But as it relates to Collison, clearly I think the Mavs view him and the way they used him at the end of the year as a more effective player, as a spark plug off the bench. That's probably why his defense appeared to get a little bit better too, because maybe in a lot of those situations he was defending twos rather than twos as in second string players, not twos as in two guards, but second tier players on the other team's second unit. So to be in that position probably enhanced what his defense looked like as well. So whatever their market value is, we don't know yet what the Mavericks have in store and what the role they envision is, what the contract they envision is for those guys. All of that will play a factor into whether or not they're here going forward. That's something that certainly is up in the air, but under the right circumstances, those guys would be nice pieces to the puzzle to have in future years also.
You know, Mark, I've been thinking about this particular team, and we were just talking about Brandon Wright, Darren Collison, O.J. Mayo, and if you spend any time around them, in their personalities, they're a little bit more soft-spoken, right, quieter guys. Rolando Blackman was saying that, you know, he'd like to see a little bit more Kevin Garnett come out of Brandon Wright. How important is it to get a point guard, perhaps, that is more dynamic and flamboyant in his personality? I mean, is that important? I mean, there were times, Mike James is older, he's 37, but I'd see him huddled up in the locker room having a little, you know, prayer time with the guys before. You spend any time around him, you want to be, you know, he needs to be a politician or a preacher, but...
or a
broadcaster, but that really does pay big dividends in the locker room and out on the floor. Am I right?
Yes. No, I look, there is no question that Mike James brought a leadership and a swagger and a belief in himself and a confidence in himself, and he would talk and he would communicate with his teammates. And I mean, look, yeah, there's absolutely no question that from a leadership standpoint and from a more outgoing dynamic personality standpoint, the Mavericks benefited from Mike James here. And going forward, that is going to have to be something that I think this team needs more of, especially at the point guard position, because it's such a critical leadership position. And leadership, you know, point guard play is more, as you know, Alyssa, than just making the assist pass. I look at some of the games that Golden State had problems in recently in the playoffs, game 6 against Denver, which they did hang on a win, the aforementioned falling apart against game 1 in San Antonio. And those guys have point guards who play well, Jared Jack and Steph Curry, You know, Steph Curry had really nice assist numbers this year, but again, there's more to being a point guard than just making the assist pass. Right. There is knowledge of game and time and clock and those sort of situations, managing the team, being a leader, having a strong presence and voice out on the floor. And so, you know, the Mavs lacked that at times this year. That is an area that's going to need to be addressed somehow, some way in the offseason. I think that is very, very important. The thing about it is, you were talking about some of those guys that don't necessarily have that. You know, I certainly think that over your time in the league, you can develop that. If you try to turn the switch on and it just happens out of nowhere, then I don't think you're being yourself. A guy can't, you know, be somebody he's not. And if you're somebody you're not, I think your teammates are going to see that and read that, and they're not going to buy it. So it has to be a change. If you're talking about guys that were here and didn't show it, then that change is going to have to be something that just sort of happens as they mature as players and as human beings. And who knows what the future holds in store for them in that regard. But the team needs more of that presence, that kind of vocal leadership and presence that you're talking about, and it needs to be at the point guard position.
Well, Mark, we're already seeing some movement taking place in terms of with the coaching staff. Coach Obi, Coach O'Brien, has retired, and now Caleb Canales has come on board, and his ascent in the NBA is really, it's an incredible testimony to hard work.
Yeah, well, for those who don't know the story, Caleb Canales was a student manager at UTA, Texas Arlington, and he left school after getting his degree. Was a high school assistant in Laredo, worked on his master's degree at Virginia Commonwealth, and his story is one of just, you know, it's a great motivational story if you're into reading about people who have overcome, who have achieved. I always think that there are people, when someone has achieved something in life and taken an unconventional path to get there, then I think that that person has a lot to share. You know, Mike Leach, the former Texas Tech football coach, would be a great example of somebody who didn't follow a conventional path to get to be a Division I college football coach. That guy went to law school, he coached in Finland. You know, point being is, it was a very, very odd path that he took to get there, and I think that those kind of people have something to share with us all. So Caleb Canales, student manager at Texas Arlington, assistant coach in high schools in Laredo, and he just set about the Eric Spolster path, and he would write letters to him every week. Eric Spolster was an unpaid intern and moved into the video coordinator position with the Miami Heat back in the mid-90s. Yeah. His father did have a background in the NBA, so that helped a lot. And Spolster worked his way up through the Miami Heat ranks as a scout and as a video coordinator, as an assistant. And ultimately now, look, he's a head coach for them for 5 years and has won a championship. So Caleb Canales would write him letters with inspirational quotes on there. He would write him letters looking for a chance to get his foot in the door. And Eric Spolster was so impressed by that that even though he didn't have any opportunities to give to him in Miami, he recommended him to people around the league, and that led to him getting an unpaid internship in Portland, and that led to him getting into the assistant video coordinator position, the video coordinator position, working his way up to be a player development guy. You develop great ties and bonds with players when you're a player development coach because you do so much before and after practice, individual one-on-one work with those guys. And his go-getter attitude, sleeping on the couch, at the team facility in Tualatin, Oregon, just outside of Portland. He would do stuff like that. And you hear, I think it was Kevin Pritchard, the former general manager in Portland, would say, well, they would have contests to see who could get to the team facility the earliest. And Pritchard would get there really early and didn't understand, I can never get to the arena before this guy, or to the practice facility before this guy can. And it's because he was sleeping there on a cot, and his... He started calling his best friend Tuna because he would eat out, you know, tuna out of the can for his meal all the time. Tuna and crackers was what this guy lived on while sleeping in a cot at the Trailblazers practice facility forever. And it's a great story, and it is inspirational, and it is a sign that sometimes it may take a while, but in life I really think that in anything, if you do the work, it may take a while for the doors to open for you, but you're going to get out of it what you put into it in life. And that guy put a lot into it, and the doors opened for him, and he got to be the interim head coach for the Blazers for about 6 weeks whenever Nate McMillan left back in March of 2012 and was an assistant for them again. Although, from my understanding, Rick Carlisle, they tried to hire him here in the 2012 offseason, in the summer of 2012, but Paul Allen wanted him to stay on board and work with Terry Stotts for a year in Portland. But everything worked out, and he's here. And I haven't met him personally. I know people who do know him personally and say tremendous things. And I admire his story and admire his background and can't wait to get to know the guy and welcome him aboard to the Mavericks. It's going to be great to have someone with that unique of a story and clearly that kind of passion for coaching and teaching and the great game of basketball at the NBA level. To have that kind of passion for it is awesome to have him as part of the organization.
Well, as the great Mark Cuban says, the best equity is sweat equity.
Yeah,
and so hard work certainly does pay off.
It does. I haven't heard him say that in that
it's
saying
in his
book, particular.
How to Win at the Sport of Business. I did read it.
The best equity is sweat. Is that like the best grease is elbow grease? So, you know, that's, I don't know. It's not quite the same. It fell flat based on your reaction, but maybe that'll be my inspirational quote that I'll start. The best grease is elbow grease.
Well, my final point that I want us to discuss, of course, is talk about the remarkable job that Rick Carlisle did this year. It was, it was difficult. He had to go through a lot of minefields, no safe boundaries, but he was able to get through it and get to 500.
Well, the thing about it is, look, Rick's not going to be someone who's going to look for that pat on the back. I think he was asked about the job that he did late in the season, and he said, look, we're not going to stand around here and accept a lot of praise when we're not even a 500 team. We didn't get the job done when we're not even a 500 team. Speak the devil, I think he just walked right back behind us in the Mavericks office. So obviously his ears are burning and he heard us talking about him. So I don't think he's gonna be looking for anybody to praise him or pat him on the back or give him his kudos for what happened this year. But the bottom line is the proof is in the pudding in terms of the results, in terms of number one, the work, the grinding, the staying the course, the not letting the team give up on themselves and pushing every button to find every extra edge to help get some of those wins as the season played out. And again, I'll go back to this. I know that being 500 isn't a whole lot to hang your hat on, but when you are without your best player for a third of the season and he spends another 15 to 20% of the time trying to get himself back to anywhere close to his ability. So you only had real Dirk for 40%, maybe 50% tops of this year, between 40 and 50%. And when I say real Dirk, I still don't think he was ever 100%, but he was 90%+ for 40 to 50% of the season and certainly played at a very, very high level in a lot of games. When you do something that hasn't happened in 32 years, when you are a team in the notoriously more difficult Western Conference, and you're 10 games below 500, and you manage to scratch and claw and get your way back to the 500 mark, and again, that's something that hasn't been done in 32 years, the record of 500 itself isn't necessarily something to hang your hat on. But when you had to play without your best player and it put you in that big of a hole, and to go from 10 games under to somehow manage to get back to level ground, to equal footing, to the 500 mark, I think that's pretty impressive, and a lot of it doesn't happen without what Rick Carlisle did in terms of his work and his energy and his enthusiasm and his staying positive and what he was able to do to help bring these guys along through coaching and teaching. And like I said, all of the managing of egos and managing of personalities and managing of situations, he could probably write a book about motivational techniques that he was able to implement and use and learn over the course of this season. So great job, Rick, and great job, everybody that worked with Rick this year.
It certainly was a formidable challenge. Well, Mark, as we get ready to close out the interview, tell all of our listeners, I know it's been a very ambitious offseason for you, FC Dallas, flying all over the place. Yeah. Where can they find you, and will you have some work at Mavs.com?
There'll be a little bit at Mavs.com. Let's see, things that I look forward to doing over the course of the summer. Coverage of the NBA draft will be with my good buddy Norm Hitchkiss on 1310, The Ticket. So we'll have coverage of the NBA draft then. Probably will be cameo appearances on our good friends on The Ticket talking about the Mavs and maybe other things over the course of the offseason. FC Dallas, Major League Soccer, will continue throughout the summer. They're the best team in the league right now, as a matter of fact. So definitely something to tune into there. Some college football for our good friends at FSN will hopefully transpire on some level in September and October, and then we'll be ready to get back to Maverick basketball. So a lot of things happening for me, the main thing that I want to see happen is that good things happen in the offseason for this team to get everybody excited about the opening of training camp in October and the opening of the season when it gets here around the 1st of November. That would make me happier than anything else. So we'll see how it plays out.
Always a pleasure,
yes.
Mark. Thank
yes.
you so much for dropping by.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
This is the mother in me coming out. You be very careful riding your bike this year, okay?
I will be. Yes, I will be. I'll have a better helmet that guards the face. We don't want to go through hours and hours of dental work and all that business anymore.
We're
so,
just glad you're 100%. That's good news.
Well, close enough, yeah. So, no. Good to be back, and I appreciate everybody's thoughts in that regard. And looking forward to a fun summer and a fun next season with the Mavs.
Absolutely. Sure. Well, be sure and join us each and every week right here at eRadioSports.com for more exclusive interviews. We will see you real soon.